few that we have signed at the Iran Judiciary Bar, that number will be rising to 50,000 lawyers. With Iran on board, you can also expect lawyers from Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon to join in as well.
And an optimistic Gilles Devers, who has already filed a complaint of genocide against Israel with the International Criminal Court, demanding an arrest warrant for top Israeli politicians, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
This is going to be a tough battle, without a doubt. But in just a few months, all these lawyers have joined us. This kind of solidarity is unprecedented. We have never seen so many lawyers join hands for one purpose in history. So this is a great sign, because it won't be enough to tell a judge, look, there's no many of us. Instead, we have to be able to defend Palestine with strong legal arguments. And by the looks of things, we have a solid base for that.
His South African fellow companion shedding light on the legal aspects of the matter while explaining how the case brought to the International Court of Justice by South Africa is also paving the way.
The ICJ order specifically spoke about creating a humanitarian corridor and a humanitarian assistance to the people of Gaza. The United States and Israel were saying that the word ceasefire did not exist in the ICJ order. But this is not true, because the humanitarian aid on the ground at scale cannot be delivered without an effective and immediate ceasefire.
It is very clear that we are witnessing a birth of new age. A new movement of justice-seeking people from all over the world is emerging, and that is why, while the South African government files a complaint, we see a grassroots movement also taking shape, a very unique one that has brought together lawyers who are seeking justice in the battle between good and evil.
And in the words of these legal experts, this goal is not far from reach.
Lawyers believe that we live in a new era in which this new global initiative will eventually lead to justice for Palestinians. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
An annual meeting of Quran reciters and memorizers with the leader of the Islamic Revolution.
Every year on the first day of the holy month of Ramadan, leader of the Islamic Revolution receives top reciters of the Holy Quran to stress the importance of this very holy book in the lives of Muslims.
In the meeting, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei described the recitation of the Quran as a sacred art, while underlining that the primary objective of this very valuable skill should be to convey the meaning and message of the Quran to the public and society and create the ground for contemplation of the Holy Scripture. Elsewhere in his speech, Ayatollah Khamenei expressed his satisfaction with the abundant number of young Quran reciters in the country, viewing their increase as a blessing of the Islamic Revolution. Meanwhile, referring to the crimes committed by the Zionist regime in Gaza, the leader pointed out that the peak of resilience that is being witnessed in Gaza presently stems from a profound familiarity with and adherence to the teachings of the Quran. Before the meeting, young and experienced reciters and memorizers were very much excited to listen and take a glimpse of the leader.
I am very much excited to recite some verses of the Holy Quran in the presence of the leader. But this is a great opportunity for me to see the leader.
This is the third time I have the honor of attending such a great event. Today I am going to have supplications to recite about the holy month of Ramadan.
Other reciters were worried about the people of Gaza, who are observing the holy month of Ramadan amid the Israeli bombing and shelling campaign.
The month of Ramadan is the month of mercy and blessing. I do believe that during this month, the Zionist regime will face a big defeat.
At the end of the ceremony, the Quran reciters and memorizers held congregational prayers led by the leader of the Islamic Revolution and broke their fast together. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Iran, Russia, and China have conducted the main phase of a joint naval drill dubbed Maritime Security Belt 2024. After arriving at the northern part of the Indian Ocean, the vessels of the three countries practice different operations. The joint drills took place in 17,000 square kilometers of water in a region that is an internationally crucial hub for energy and trade traffic. The first phase of the naval drills included live firing at designated surface targets in the Sea of Oman. Various vessels and fast attack crafts from the IRGC were also involved in the exercise. The vessels were armed with the state-of-the-art homegrown advanced weapons. The next phase included the Photo X exercise and offensive formations. The helicopters of the Islamic Republic of Iran Navy and the IRGC monitored the region in all stages of the exercise. Iran's Navy commander hailed the exercise as a successful endeavor to improve maritime cooperation of the contributing countries. The commander also said that Iran expects the drills to expand in the future.
This year, as we expected, regarding the types of vessels participating in the exercise, both China and Russia have increased the variety as well as tonnage of the vessels. So hopefully, we expect more countries to join the drills in the future, especially regional states.
Admiral Irani also stated that regional nations have the capacity to confront piracy and terrorism by enhancing cooperation. The exercises are the latest in joint drills by Iran, China, and Russia. Iran says regional countries are most welcome to take part in the drills that are going to take place in the future. The Islamic Republic has time and again stressed that regional countries are the ones that are truly in charge of establishing security in the region. Mahdi Abbasian, Konarak.
On the first day of the holy month of Ramadan in Nigeria, the Islamic movement held a rally through the streets of the capital, Abuja, in a peaceful protest against the massacre of innocent civilians in Gaza. The protest march took the demonstrators to the gate of the United States Embassy, where they sat down and submitted a letter of protest condemning the Israeli genocide in Gaza and U.S. involvement in the killing of innocent Palestinians.
America is one of the major party in this killing of innocent female and children in Gaza. Since October 7th to date, they have killed 31,000, more than 31,000 innocent people, majorly female and children in Gaza.
The demonstrators blame the United States and British governments for using their influence to block a UN resolution calling for a ceasefire. They said every decent government has condemned the Israeli terror attacks on the Palestinians, but the US government has continued to support the mass murder of innocent Palestinians.
They are killing female and children. They are imposing starvation on innocent female and children. Babies have been seen under rubble, crying inside blood. We see a lot of fathers carrying a lifeless body of their children killed by Israelis. Anybody that has concern for humanity should come out today on the street and show his solidarity with Palestinians.
The demonstrators burned the U.S. and Israeli flags as they slammed Tel Aviv's regime impunity and the silence of the international community.
Many Muslims in Nigeria believe that Israel's continuous killing of Palestinians in Gaza on the eve of the holy month of Ramadan is a clear proof of the regime's disrespect for Islamic sanctities. The protesters here are urging world leaders to pressure Israel to end the massacre in Gaza. Anjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
Britons treat their National Health Service, better known as the NHS, with an almost religious reverence.
We grew up using the NHS from the cradle to the grave, free the point of use, and that has tremendous significance for our lives.
But today, this eternal source of national pride is under increased scrutiny, with new figures showing more than 120,000 people died last year in England alone from delays in life-saving treatment. The NHS is a state-funded healthcare system founded in 1948. Back then, it cost around $20 billion in today's money to run. Last year, the government spent more than $181 billion. Despite that, more than 7 million people are now on the waiting list in England alone. That's nearly 12% of the population having to wait at least 52 weeks for a health consultation.
Our politicians aren't really serving the public interest. They are serving a neoliberal agenda, which is to transfer the country's natural assets and wealth to overseas corporations like United Health of America and other big multinationals.
The government has promised to cut the long queues, but has made little progress. The situation is no better in the rest of the kingdom. In Scotland and Northern Ireland, 1 in 80 people, and in Wales, 1 in 20 are having to wait more than a year for treatment. There's also the energy costs and inflation that has reduced the value of the NHS budget, meaning it now has to do more with significantly less. Add to the mix a shortage of staff, which means more pressure on exhausted employees.
We've had more than a decade of defunding since the financial crash. This has led to a real terms wage cut for staff. The whole population, the health needs have gone up. We have trouble keeping hold of staff. And we've also lost significant capacity with the NHS through privatisation. So we don't have enough beds, we don't have enough staff, and the staff we do have are being treated appallingly.
The health service is also coping with an ageing population. A large number of people now live with chronic conditions like heart disease and diabetes.
The COVID-19 pandemic severely tested the NHS, with its aftermath still posing serious challenges. Health officials and experts warn for the UK's National Health Service to survive, the next government should declare it a national emergency. Saipur is up, London.
India says it will enact the Citizenship Amendment Act that provides fast-track naturalization for multiple religious groups who fled to India from Afghanistan, Bangladesh and Pakistan before 2014. The law, however, excludes Muslims from those countries. Back in 2019, law's approval sparked deadly protests across the country and was halted since. The Muslim minority in India fears the government is using this law and other similar laws to widen crackdown on them.
India introduced this bill in 2016. With the aim of granting citizenship to what it calls a persecuted section of refugees. However, the bill has become one of the most controversial issues across the country since it excludes Muslims from availing citizenship. Critics accuse the ruling BJP of targeting a particular community on the basis of faith, which experts call unconstitutional.
Commentators also question the exclusion of persecuted religious minorities from other regions such as Tibet, Sri Lanka and Myanmar. India's Interior Ministry has said in a statement, those eligible can now apply online for Indian citizenship. The issue has been one of the key pledges of Indian Prime Minister since assuming office in 2014. The new legislation makes changes to more than six decades old Indian citizenship law.
It's unfortunate for us that we are not part of this new law, despite the fact we have faced worse persecution any community has faced so far. We have still hope one day India will accept us on the ground of humanity.
Opposition political parties have accused the ruling party of influencing the elections, saying the move is to polarize the voters, considering its timing. More than 200 petitions challenging the law are still pending before the court of law.
We thank India they provide us shelter. It's an act of kindness, but we urge this country not to abandon us, knowing the fact we have seen deadly violence and persecution.
India, home to roughly 200 million Muslims, have recently seen targeted attacks and vicious hate campaigns. Critics accuse the ruling party of mixing religion with politics, resonating with India's majority. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Russia Navy warship, and China Navy warship. This is Iranian Navy warship 235, Italian Channel 16. Do you repeat? Over.
the Maritime Security Belt 2024 has officially kicked off with Russian and Chinese vessels entering Iran's territorial waters south of the country on Tuesday. The naval and airborne units of Iran's army and the IRGC, along with their Chinese and Russian counterparts, will participate in various operations during this exercise. Naval delegations from Azerbaijan, Pakistan, Kazakhstan, Oman, and South Africa have also taken part as observer states. At the first stage of the drill, the naval officers of the three countries as well as the observer states reviewed different phases of the exercise on maps and held tactical briefings. Later, the naval commanders of Iran, Russia, and China held a joint presser. The Iranian Navy's deputy commander said the main aim of the joint exercise is to help safeguard security in the northern part of the Indian Ocean.
Upholding peace and security in the north of Indian Ocean and having a specialized cooperation in combating piracy and terrorism in our region are among the main goals of this exercise. We are constantly working to improve this cooperation.
Meanwhile, Chinese and Russian Navy commanders said the joint exercise further demonstrates the preparedness of the participating countries to maintain security while also deepening their practical cooperation. 2024 is the fifth consecutive year that the Islamic Republic of Iran's Navy is hosting countries participating in the Maritime Security Belt drills in the northern Indian Ocean region. This year's naval drills have kicked off under the motto Together for Peace and Security, with participating countries highlighting the importance of jointly safeguarding regional security. Mahdia Bosyan, Konarak.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrents fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for thee. I ask thee concerning the complaints of thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among thy servants, of a handmaid from among thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask thee, O he who owns all objects of need which are granted by his will and hastened to his desire, that thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that thou willst, and givest me mercy from thee. Forgiveness decreases thee not, and giving injuries thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from thee: the facility to obey thee at its beginning, and the favor of thy forgiveness at its end. O he who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to The Spotlight. In this edition, a statement on Thursday, Hamas announced that it had put forth a new proposal for a ceasefire that also includes a prisoner swap deal. But while Gaza is looking for ways to end the war, word is out that Netanyahu has approved attacking Rafah, a city in Gaza that was expected to be a safe place for displaced Palestinians. In this edition of Spotlight, we will be discussing the dire situation in the besieged coastal strip and Israel's true intentions in continuing the war. Our guests in this edition are Masoud Shajadeh, chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, joining us live from London, and also Seb Shah, the author of West Asia and an expert, joining us from Belfast. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen. Let's begin with Mr. Masoud Shajadeh. Mr. Shajadeh, we have just heard that Netanyahu has approved attacking Rafah. Now, this is a city that from the very beginning was deemed to be a safe place for displaced Palestinians. That is according to Israeli sources themselves. Why is this happening now at this point in time when Hamas is putting forth a ceasefire deal, a prisoner swap deal, and is looking for ways to end the war?
Well, it's very clear that Israel, this Zionist state, from the outset was set to exclude Palestinians from that land, ethnic cleanse them, and by any means possible, and grab as much land as possible. But this particular government, in particular, it actually been committed to ethnic cleansing and genocide long before 7th of October, to the extent that there has been even conflict internally in this regime because of this policy. This particular government is committed to that. So we'll use any possible avenue, any possible opportunity to kill as many Palestinians, kill as many children, kill as many women. And in their eyes, the children of Gaza are the future Palestinians, and they need to be eradicated. They need to be killed. And this is why the policy since the 7th of October, which has been unleashed, it shows very clearly that they are targeting innocent civilians with a brutality, without any mercy, in front of TV cameras. And while the international community is watching, and at worst, United States and Western allies are equipping this Zionist state to kill most effectively, most brutally, and most systematically. This is not what is happening right now. The fact that Netanyahu wants to use this opportunity to kill as many people, innocent people, as many Palestinians, and ethnically cleanse the Gaza, is not a surprise. And it's not a new policy. It's been their policy, and they are pursuing it so openly and so publicly. And I think we need to wake up to this reality. Otherwise, this is going to go on and on. And you know, international community is just doing nothing and wishing for a change of policy, which is not going to happen without enough pressure being put on the Zionist state.
Well, Mr. Shajar, you raised some very important issues right there, but I would like to rewind what you said and go back to a part which is very important. You said all of this is happening in front of TV cameras and the international community is watching. So let's bring in our guest from Belfast, Mr. Sha'at. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your name correctly. I hope that I do. But Israel is committing war crimes, crimes that have been defined by international law as war crimes. Israel has completely neglected what is known to be as the Geneva Convention, or what the ICRC itself claims to be rules for war. So what do you think the intention of Israel is by so openly neglecting everything that modern human beings believe to be the pillars of the modern society?
And let me just grasp the last statement you said. This modern civilized society which you're talking about, it's all fake and hypocrisy. It used to be used just by the West when they want to intimidate a country or impose sanction or just get their interest through. And the international law and international community and international organizations being formed after the Second World War, like the United Nations and these bodies, and Geneva even convention and the special, the fourth article of it, and that it's all proven. Gaza is proved all of that was fake and it was just hypocrisy. Since the United States of America, as they claim the leaders of the free world, which means the Western camp, they themselves who showed us in Gaza, they pretend with this Zionist entity as their outpost, military post in there. And I want to say it's their banana republic in the middle of West Asia, which is the Zionists try to deny that, like Ben-Gvir when he said we are not a banana republic to the Americans. They are a banana republic in there, and they, without the support of the United States, without the money, without the funding, without the arms, they would disappear in weeks. And this is one point. The United States of America, who can open the land routes from Rafah or Kerb Abu Salem to bring the miles upon miles from aid waiting in the borders of Rafah, can do it with one phone call to order, not to ask, Netanyahu. And they would obey because they know without the United States of America, they can't. But Biden said there is no red line when he was talking about for Netanyahu, for the Israelis, means they can do whatever they want, and the United States of America can ask, pretend like they care for the Palestinians. Once they start this airdrops of aid, which has landed in top of people and killed seven at some stage, the United States of America drop a few parcels of aid on Gaza on this hand, and on the other hand, tons upon tons of ammunition going to the Zionist entity, supplying it. The same goes for the British, for the Germans, for the French, for Australia, for Canada. All these Western camps is becoming disgusted because they are involved in they are complicit in genocide now. If we can hear the rulings of the International Court about asking Israel to follow 1, 2, 3 steps and sub and provide this report, and as well to take steps not to put the Palestinians' lives in harm way, and to allow the aid in, and telling the governments who supply the Zionist entity with a lot of with cash and with the ammunition and with that are complicit with it. This is clear, but none listen. Since the Zionist entity, they think they are shielded. By this Western diplomatic shield from any organization to impose on it anything. We witnessed the United States of America use 3 vetoes against the ceasefire in Gaza to save the people in Gaza. 30% of the children in Gaza are malnutrition now, and a lot of them dying from hunger and starvation. And we can see the roundabout of Kuwaiti roundabout in Western Gaza become the call nickname, the flower massacres, since people go gather there waiting for any trucks to get them any kind of aid or flour to get to their starving children. They risk their life, and a lot of them knows they can't go there and will not come back but they have to do something for their kids. And this is all done at the watch of the United States of America.
Exactly. It's all happening under the watch of the U.S. And also, Mr. Shajareh, the U.S. also did some kind of what I would like to call a propaganda move to send some aid that at best can be described as a drop in the bucket, something that could only make some headlines for just a few days, sending some kind of meager amount of aid to Gaza, while it is supporting Israel by sending tons of weapons, all kinds of weapons that Israel needs, let alone, as our guest in Belfast just mentioned, all the support that it gives to the Zionist entity in the United Nations by vetoing any attempt for a ceasefire.
It really is outrageous. It is outrageous that this level of killing and brutality, it goes on. It's outrageous that no attempt is being made to stop it. And indeed, there is a veto taking place to make sure that it will not stop. There is a political cover for this Zionist state by United States and its Western allies to make sure that the killing will continue with its brutality and with its totality. And indeed, arms are being poured in free of charge. They're not even being, they're not even being sold to kill innocent people. Everybody knows what's going on. And indeed, let us not forget that the corridor for aid to go into Israel, to go to this Zionist state and feed not just the Zionists, but feed the war machine, is going through Saudi Arabia, Emirates, and Jordan. And, you know, oil is going through Turkey. This is outrageous. It's outrageous because it's happening in front of the world population. We are seeing it day in, day out. I'm sick and tired of actually seeing this. I'm sick and tired of seeing myself and my family crying their eyes out in this month of Ramadan for human beings being treated in that way. And at the same time, United States claim to be champion of democracy, champion of human rights, champion of standing for the weak ones around the world. And this is outrageous. It has to stop. Where is the democracy? 70 to 80% of Western nations' population is asking for ceasefire now, right now. And, you know, these criminals who are in power, be it in Britain, France, Germany, or United States, are indeed ignoring their own people. And then they claim that this is a democracy. I think what is now is very clear that all the institutions that have been set up to stop these sort of brutal war crimes, be it United States, international courts, and so forth, are not fit for purpose. And we need to bring a change. And we need to bring a change not just in these international institutions, but citizens in Britain, France, Germany, and United States need to ask themselves, do they want this direction of going towards sort of jungle, law of jungle, people killing each other and being allowed to commit genocide in such an open way, or they are responsible to bring an end to it? And, you know, they will put more effort. Already I take my hat out to people in Britain, France, Germany, and others who are coming out in demonstrations day in, day out. But it needs to go far beyond demonstrations. We need to sort of say enough is enough. And I think we need to demand that there has to be some justice prevailing at this 11th hour.
You're absolutely right, Mr. Shajada, and these grassroots campaigns have proven to be successful in inflicting heavy losses on corporations that support Israel. We've had McDonald's and also Starbucks announcing heavy losses. So, Mr. Shajada, could you please tell us, in your opinion, could the same grassroots campaigns put the same amount of pressure on their governments, who are clearly, against their people's will, are still supporting Israel?
I just came today from a massive demonstration in Belfast. I addressed it in front of the American consulate, and the people are outraged, and they are outraged at their own local politicians. In Ireland, they are outraged at the Irish Prime Minister and Irish leaders of the biggest political parties going in St. Patrick's Day, which is the Irish National Day, to hand a shamrock to Joe Biden. And they say, you know, like, you don't go and shake hands with genocidal Joe. The people are disgusted with their leadership, with their political parties, often trying to implicit their political parties in supporting genocide by going and sitting with Joe Biden. That limit, it's a massive call for them to turn away from doing that. But tomorrow, the whole thing will be, so I don't think, the United States of America, even in the Congress, they issued a bill for banning or taking over Tuk-Tuk, because they think it is a lot of the youngs are getting their news from there, not from the mainstream media, because of Palestine, because of the what's going on in Palestine. They want only the lies comes from the Fox News or CNN or BBC to trickle to the people. They want to control them and make them sheep people. They don't understand the people are educated and they can think and make decisions for themselves. They don't want to keep bombarding them with lies, since studies says there is 80% of the people who read the news, they don't go to find out was it right or wrong to analyze. So they depend on that. And there is a huge industry in the Zionist entity in fake news and telling lies. Since that entity itself was based on lies, religious lies, national lies, ethnic groups lies, everything about that entity and its leadership, the Zionist entity, is lies. And the United States of America, I want to say to my friend, which pretending the leader of the free world and supposed to defend the, as you said, Mr. Shadri, the weak, they are not. And you know, and I know, they're the one who committed genocide after genocide in Vietnam. They're the one who killed the First Nation in America. They annihilated them. They're the one who destroyed a lot of countries in Latin America. They're the one who killed nearly 2 million Iraqis in Iraq under a couple of lies, which is proof, weapons of mass destruction and stuff like that, and is still stagnating the Iraqi economy and looting everything in there. They're the one who went in Syria under the cover of they want to fight Daesh, which they created, and they're looting the oil and the gas from Syria and destroying the country. They're the one who want to make sure the Zionist entity destroy Gaza and crying to Netanyahu, like the killing them softly, gently, as Biden said. It's disgusting, and it's about time. I agree with you, brother. The new order supposed to be emerging and learning, because Gaza exposed them all.
So, Mr. Shajara, in your opinion, how much power do these grassroots campaigns have, and can they put enough pressure on the governments? Or let's say, how far would these governments dare to go?
Well, I think what very clear that these governments, they have now morality, they're morally bankrupt, ideologically bankrupt. And, you know, when it comes to law and order, they're bankrupt. But never before, until now, they were exposed the way that they're exposed now. It's true what happened in Vietnam. It's true all the things that the brother is highlighting. But it's really just now that masses in West are waking up to these realities. And I think this is the beginning of the end of the influence of these politicians. These politicians have to be punished when it comes to the election. They don't fear anything else. They have no morality. They've got no common sense or dignity. They need to be punished on the ballot paper. And indeed, I think that's going to happen. And indeed, I think this what we are seeing, this mass awakening that we are seeing right across Western world, be it United States, France, Germany, etc., etc., despite the fact that they are using dictatorial policies to stop these demonstrations, to legislate to stop these demonstrations, and to stop the voice of those who are standing up for justice and saying never again. But nevertheless, it's growing. It's growing by minute. It's growing by day. It's growing every month. And so I would my response to your question is that this is not the end, but this is the beginning of the end of this sort of politics being used to con not just people in Western Asia and around the world, but conning their own citizens. And this awakening is going to matter, and its strength is becoming more powerful day by day.
You're absolutely right, Mr. Shajara. And just as Mr. Shath just mentioned, he has come back from a mass demonstration in Ireland. We have been seeing pro-Palestine demonstrations in countries that we would never imagine. And Mr. Shath, in your opinion, how far do you think these demonstrations can go? And we also live in the day and age of social media. So how do you think social media can also increase solidarity with the Palestinians and in order to bring a change?
In Ireland, there is similarities because they suffered colonial and they suffered the same thing. So there is a connection in the struggle. But as well, social media influencing big time, since the people get their news straight from the source. They get it even in Arabic from someone who's been his house or her house attacked, and they see the images and they see the starvation and they see the effect of it, and they cannot see any of that being even displayed on their own mainstream media. And one of the other things in here, which is I've been witnessing since from last November till now, the respect these demonstrations showing for the Lebanese resistance and mainly for the Yemeni resistance. It's amazing to see that and see how the people are proud to see there is a noble movement like the Yemenis and the Lebanese resistance or the Iraqi resistance coming to support the Palestinians, as they compare that to what Che Guevara done in the late 60s in Africa, in supporting the African against the apartheid and trying to fight. So there is a movement growing to dismantle. One of the slogans they saying, you have to dismantle this Zionist entity out of and take it out of this region. A lot of the youngsters, Jewish even voices, start to say in that as well. So this has become a grassroots movement which will influence everything. And the first result you can see of that, the election of the Honorable George Galloway as a member of the Parliament in Britain, he came to the platform for Gaza and was elected for that. And this movement will become bigger and bigger and bigger, and it will change a lot of the ruling elite. You're not going to see their faces again in offices. I hope so.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry to cut you off right there, but we're running out of time. Mr. Masoud Shajara, Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission from London, and also Mr. Saeb Shath, author and a West Asia expert from Belfast. Thanks for joining us on this edition of The Spotlight.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. In the limelight.
The Zionist regime is intentionally starving people in the Gaza Strip, which has resulted in full-scale famine in the besieged territory. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Tharifa Hamad is in her 70s. Although she has witnessed a huge amount of brutality in her life, she has never experienced anything worse than the current genocide by the Zionist regime. It is the first time that she has ever suffered from extreme hunger. Tharifa stayed in Beit Hanun, northern Gaza, for a number of months after the Zionist regime declared its war during October. Yet in recent weeks, the situation became so serious there that she moved southwards. For 2 months, Tharifa had to bake bread using animal feed. She said, "We had no other choice, otherwise we would die of starvation." As they lacked fuel, Tharifa and her husband had to burn their own furniture and clothes so that they could cook a little bread. Flour and other food items have been unaffordable when they can be found in markets. A can of peas has been priced at $8 in the north of Gaza recently, whereas it would sell for only around 25 cents before the war was declared. Apart from bread made with animal seeds, Tharifa and her husband have had to eat leaves from trees and paper. For the few days before she left northern Gaza, Tharifa had nothing but salt. She said, "The salt raised my blood pressure. I began to feel dizzy and I could not see clearly." She added, "I didn't know if I should keep eating salt and die of high blood pressure as there was no medicine in the city, or should I stop eating salt and die of hunger?" Tharifa's journey to southern Gaza was arduous. As Tharifa was weak, her husband had to drag her on a wooden panel for hours on end. He had to stop and rest every so often. Tharifa fainted in the last hour of the journey. Some people came to her aid and sprayed her with water. When she regained consciousness, she drank some water and ate a few dates that people they had just made gave to her. Tharifa and her husband were given more food when they arrived at Deir al-Balah refugee camp. She said, "My tears started falling when I saw some real bread. I had nearly forgotten what it tasted like." She was able to eat sandwiches containing meat from a tin, cheese, and hummus. She said, "They tasted delicious." Khaled, Amir, and Saad are three children whose parents were killed by the Zionist regime during the current genocide. For months afterwards, they had just one meal per day. It consisted of fried potatoes, often potatoes that were rotting, or bread soaked in butter. They obtained a little flour when eight trucks managed to enter the northern part of Gaza. The flour was leaking from an aid truck. It was just enough to bake a little bread. The first fresh flour-based bread that Khaled tested in more than 2 months. Khaled took a major risk to obtain that small amount of flour. The truck from which he got the aid had been driven to Arashid Street, southwest of Gaza City, on February 29th. The Zionist regime killed at least 118 Palestinians waiting for aid on that day. For a number of days, the children had nothing to eat at all. Their weights dropped drastically. Khaled said, "I passed out from starvation." He was rescued by some neighbors who gave him sugar, some bread, and canned beef. Without anyone to provide for them, the children moved southwards. They did not know where to go, so they just followed others. Along the way, they succeeded in meeting up with an uncle. Eventually, they arrived in Deir al-Balah. They are living in a tent. Abida Abu Esma, 67, had to leave her home in Gaza City's Beish refugee camp during the current war. She was staying at a school located in Jabalia area when it was invaded by the Zionist regime troops. Her husband was taken into detention during the invasion. Abida's husband had previously been in prison for 7 years by the Zionist regime. Initially, she remained at the Jabalia school after the Zionist regime troops took her husband away, yet she had to leave it when food ran out completely. She fell during her journey of evacuation. A paramedic helped her, and she tried to walk again, but it was too painful. As a result, the paramedic had to carry her on his back until they reached Deir el-Balah. She is taking shelter in another school there. Books from its library are being burnt for heat and for cooking. Her husband remains in detention, and she hopes she will still be alive when he is released. She said, "At least we won't die of hunger here in the south. It would be better to be killed by bombing than by starvation."
Thank you.